This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
a new UN assessment says 5 million people in Somalia, more than 40% of the population, do not have enough food. Humanitarian efforts continue, but long-term solutions are needed.
That's VOA's Joe DiCapua reporting. Details coming up.
Also, the mood is tense in the DRC's capital following a day and night of deadly violence involving security forces and anti-government protesters. And former Vice President Joyce Majuru tells citizens of Zimbabwe living in the diaspora to return home to register for the 2018 presidential election.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the mood remains tense in the DRC's capital following a day and night of deadly violence involving security forces and anti-government protesters. A human rights group reports more than 40 people have been killed, most of them civilians. William Clowes has the latest from Kinshasa.
There were sporadic clashes between police and groups of young men early Tuesday in some parts of the capital. Unusually for Kinshasa, trucks full of soldiers from the Republican Guard were out on the streets. Heavier violence took place overnight as armed men set fire to at least five headquarters of opposition parties that had helped organise the protests Monday. Several pro-government parties saw their offices burned down during those protests. Félix Tshisekedi, a leading figure in the largest opposition party, the UDPS, spoke to reporters Tuesday as people picked through the remains of his headquarters in Limité, an opposition stronghold. Tshisekedi says commandos from the ruling party arrived at 2 a.m. and went to work until 4:30 a.m. They attacked and killed our guards, he said. There are five dead. Tshisekedi went on to say that the DRC is a dictatorship, and he says this government deserves the popular revolt that is coming to topple it. He later told VOA by phone that the death toll from the overnight attack has risen to seven, and others are still missing. Emery Akunji, a parliamentarian from another party targeted during the night, told VOA that heavily armed men smashed down the door just before 5 a.m. and threw bombs, setting fire to the building. Government spokesman Lambert Mende told VOA by phone that the government has called on the public prosecutor to expand his investigation into Monday's unrest to include the violence overnight. We do not know who is responsible for these attacks, Mende said, but as a government, we condemn anyone who takes it upon themselves to seek vengeance. He said that the government will wait for the prosecutor to finish the inquiry into who is responsible for the violence. The opposition coalition, known as the Rassemblement, or the Assembly, had organized a march Monday to demand that President Kabila step down in December when his second term ends. The Electoral Commission, however, has delayed the elections, saying it may need until 2018 to create a new voter roll. The opposition asserts that Kabila simply wants to stay in power. Opposition leaders say security forces obstructed their planned march on Monday, firing tear gas to disperse protesters as they gathered. The government says it had withdrawn authorization for the demonstration after violence from the protesters. The Interior Minister said 17 people were killed, three policemen and 14 civilians. But Human Rights Watch says it has received credible reports that security forces have killed at least 37 people since the protests began. The group's DRC researcher, Ida Sawyer, told VOA that most were killed when the security forces fired on crowds of protesters. She says others died when security forces burned down opposition party headquarters. Sawyer also says that Human Rights Watch has received credible reports that protesters have killed at least six police officers and a supporter of President Kabila's party, and have also burned and looted several shops and police stations. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
A A new UN assessment says 5 million people in Somalia, more than 40% of the population, do not have enough food. Humanitarian efforts continue, but long-term solutions are needed. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
Food insecurity has gotten worse in Somalia since February, when the last assessment was released. Richard Trenchard is the Food and Agriculture Organization's country director in Somalia.
A total population of about 12.3 million people. We're seeing that 5 million of those are hungry every day. And of that 5 million, about 1 million are acutely hungry. And of that 1 million, about a third of those, just over 350,000, are children under five. So what we're seeing is about two out of every five Somalis today are hungry.
He says the majority of those listed as acutely hungry are those who live in camps near towns and cities, having left their rural homes.
Today's figure, the 5 million figure of hungry people in Somalia, is about 20% worse than what we saw a few months ago.
So much of the problem can be blamed on erratic weather.
We've just had a really heavy El Nino event in Somalia, and a large amount of the worsening situation can be attributed to that. The El Nino, we know, has affected many, many parts of the world. And certainly it's hit the Horn of Africa badly, it's hit Southern Africa badly.
Trenchard says El Nino affected Somalia in two big ways.
At the end of last year, we had very heavy rainfall in the south, the main breadbasket area of Somalia. And this was linked to increased risks of flooding. And then late 2015 and then into this year, what we saw was a really bad drought up in the north. Let's remember, this wasn't just a one-off drought. This followed 3 or 4 years of really, really bad rainfall patterns.
The FAO official says when he visited northern Somalia, it was similar to the 1930s Dust Bowl era in the United States. Severe drought and destruction of dry lands led to enormous dust storms, winds literally blowing away once fertile soil. Trenchard also says many northern communities lost 80% of their livestock. Despite the bleak figures, he says ongoing humanitarian efforts have saved many lives. Besides food aid, there are cash transfers to allow farmers to rent the equipment they need to work the land. The FAO also provides medical care and vaccinations for animals that have survived the drought. Trenchard admits it's been tough to make real inroads in Somalia year after year. But, he says, things could soon change.
In this area, I think there are some grounds for hope. In the coming weeks, the government of Somalia will launch its National Development Plan. This is the first such plan for 25, 28 years. And for the first time, we begin to have a blueprint of priorities for the longer-term investments that we need to make to really help us address the underlying causes of poverty and malnutrition. Because you can't fight hunger just by humanitarian response alone.
He says the food chain system in Somalia needs to be improved. About 25 years ago, Somalia produced twice the food it does today. Trenchard says that potential can be realized again with the technological advances made in agriculture over the last quarter century. A major part of this would be reducing food lost during production, storage, and transport. That means modern irrigation systems, better storage facilities, and improved roads. Although security remains an issue in Somalia due to al-Shabaab militants, aid agencies have gained access to much more of the country. This includes the so-called breadbasket of southern Somalia, near the Shabelle and Juba rivers. It was just 5 years ago that parts of Somalia were hit by famine. About 250,000 people died as a result. The FAO official says much has changed since then. There have been successful military operations against militants that continue, and a recognized government. Also, in recent years, Somalia has resumed exporting livestock. Trenchard says last year, more than 5 million cattle, goats, sheep, and camels were sold to other countries. That brought in $250 million in revenue. He says the potential for Somalia to grow is enormous. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Former Vice President Joyce Mujuru tells citizens of Zimbabwe living in the diaspora to return home to register for the 2018 presidential election. Interviewed by a South African radio station during a rally of her new political party, People First, Mujuru urged greater citizen participation in presidential elections. She also says that she will pressure the government to allow voting in the diaspora. Anti-government demonstrators have battled police in the capital Harare in recent weeks, demanding political reforms for a failing economy. President Robert Mugabe has served as the nation's only elected president since independence in 1975. He is the world's oldest head of state at the age of 92. Mujuru served as Mr. Mugabe's vice president for 10 years, but was charged with plotting against him 2 years ago. She was dismissed from government and expelled from the ruling Zimbabwe African Nation Union Patriotic Front Party. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Following a day and night of violence, a human rights group reports more than 40 people, most of them civilians, are dead in Kinshasa. According to a new government assessment, close to 5 million people in Somalia do not have enough food. And Zimbabweans living in the diaspora have been told to return home for the 2018 presidential election. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Officials on the Greek island of Lesbos are requesting immediate evacuation to the mainland for more than 5,000 migrants after fire gutted the Moria detention camp during the night. Families with small children grabbed their belongings and fled into nearby fields as the fire raged. There are no reported injuries. 9 camp residents are being held as suspects in causing the fire during a dispute. The government says it plans to offer temporary housing for the detainees on passenger ferries. It has also asked for additional security forces on the island. Local officials have complained of overcrowded conditions in the camp, which is 8 kilometers from the main town on Lesbos. More than 60,000 migrants and refugees seeking European refuge are stranded in Greece. Those who have arrived in the last 6 months are held on Lesbos and 4 other islands in the Aegean. Pope Francis was the highlight today of a major interreligious conference that took place this week in Assisi, Italy. The Pope participated in the concluding events of a 3-day conference that drew more than 450 Jewish, Muslim, Christian, and other religious leaders from around the world. The Pope flew by helicopter to Assisi in central Italy for the final day of Thirst for Peace, Religions and Cultures in Dialogue. It was a conference organized by a Catholic charitable organization dealing with social and interfaith issues. Reporter Josephine McKenna covered the conference. She spoke with me about the significance of the event as well as the Pope's special lunch guests.
The conference is a day of peace, prayers for peace, where leaders of various religious faiths, including Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, and others have come together in the small Italian town of Assisi to pray for peace. And this was a tradition that was set up 30 years ago under the previous Pope, John Paul II. Assisi is the home of Saint Francis, who lived there 800 years ago. He's known as a man of peace and compassion. And it's this town that has become a symbol of interreligious dialogue today.
I understand there was a very special guest at this interreligious conference, and it was actually Pope Francis of Assisi who attended the conference and had a very special lunch as well.
Pope Francis flew to Assisi today. He also had lunch with refugees as well as religious leaders. He wanted to stress a message of peace by really focusing on the survivors of war and conflict who have come to Italy. And they included 6-year-old Maria. She came to Italy from the Syrian capital, Damascus, a few months ago with her parents. They traveled by boat through Libya and across the Mediterranean and into Italy. But the lunch, which was held in the refectory of the Franciscan friars, also included refugees from Eritrea, Mali, and Nigeria. These refugees have escaped war and conflict at home and are seeking to build a new life in Italy. And the Pope wanted to really highlight their plight while emphasizing the need for peace in the world.
How was that for the refugees to be able to have lunch with the Pope?
Well, the refugees included a man called Sira, who comes from Mali, and he met the Pope on Holy Thursday, just before Easter, which is a day where the Pope performs an unusual but historic ritual where he washes the feet of certain people, and he chose to include this man, a Muslim, in the people whose feet he was washing at the time. And this man was included in the lunch today. He's no longer a refugee. He now has a legal work permit in Italy, and he was quoted saying, "I believe there is no difference whether we're Muslim or Christian, and we all pray to the same God." So he was apparently quite thrilled to be reunited with the Pope at this special occasion today.
What is the next step then for the refugees after this very special occasion today?
Well, many of these refugees are staying in migrant centres outside Rome. There's another centre near Assisi. So they're in different parts of the country. Still very much an uphill battle for many migrants and asylum seekers. There are 800, for example, in a small centre on the border of Italy and France in a town called Ventimiglia. And there's a great deal of pressure there because those migrants have been crossing into France, being sent back to Italy, and that's becoming an increasingly difficult problem for Italy to manage because France, Switzerland and Austria are closing their borders and making it much more difficult for migrants to move into other parts of Europe. And so there's a great deal of pressure on Italy to try and manage the growing number of migrants that are arriving in Italy but also staying in Italy.
Also, I understand today the UNHCR released its figures regarding refugees and migrants. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, according to the latest figures, more than 300,000 refugees and migrants have so far crossed the Mediterranean into Europe in 2016. 130,000 have landed in Italy, and the agency estimates over 3,200 have been killed or have gone missing during their journey. The UNHCR told a press briefing in Geneva that they were very concerned about the continuing arrivals and stressed that this route between countries like Libya and other parts of North Africa crossing to Greece and Italy is a deadly route. And even though the number of crossings this year is lower than the same period last year, the number of people reported dead or missing is only slightly lower than the year before. That's of great concern to the United Nations and to those people who are still going out on the boats to rescue these people in very dangerous waters.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Most immigrants to the United States live in large cities, but many prefer smaller communities that offer a slower pace and proximity to rural scenery. Huntsville, Texas, is a community where close to 300 Africans now thrive. As VOA's Greg Flakus reports from Huntsville, it was jobs at nearby state prisons that drew many of them to the city of just under 40,000 people.
Many of Huntsville's Africans can be found at the Rena International Church on Sundays to hear Pastor John Operuve's fervent sermon.
Our God is a covenant-keeping God.
Pastor John says most members of the flock are Nigerians like him, but not all.
Being an African church, it serves as a meeting point to every African that comes down to Huntsville.
The church welcomes all who want to worship and celebrate. Ghanaian Peter Nyanor likes to wear traditional garb from his homeland.
Sunday has been a day that we use to remind ourselves that we still have a rich culture back home. Seeing your fellow people putting on the attire, it reminds you where you come from.
The church also lends a hand to newcomers who need support to get settled.
Everyone that comes that needs help, we try as much as possible within our limited resources, we help them out.
But the African population's growth is not from immigration alone. Many of the future leaders of Huntsville's African community are already here. Huntsville, a little over 100 kilometers north of Houston, is the location of the home and gravesite of Texas hero Sam Houston. Sam Houston State University, with its diverse mix of students, and the headquarters of the Texas Criminal Justice Department, which operates nearby prisons. Job opportunities in prisons have drawn Africans to Huntsville. Most of the Sunday congregants are prison guards, including the women.
When you're in the workplace, your co-worker is the family you have at that point, because if anything goes wrong, he or she will come to your rescue.
She says many American co-workers, including African Americans, are curious about her culture.
I've had certain co-workers who will come to me, "Oh, I want to learn Igbo. Can you teach me how to speak Igbo?" And I'll be like, "Sure, I can."
There are enough Africans here to support a small store with products from the home continent. Next door, Pastor John visits T-shirt shop owner Nathan Smith, a fellow Christian who has become a good friend.
I've met people from Africa before, but I've never witnessed an African church before. And I've been over there and experienced their service, and they're real humble and real down to earth, and they worship and they love God.
Pastor John says he's encouraged integration with the larger community in Huntsville, something residents like Kathy have welcomed.
I think it's great. I love diversity. I think it's wonderful.
Pastor John and his church have supported local charities and events, building a sense of belonging for African immigrants within the community at large. Greg Flakus, VOA News, Huntsville, Texas.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Tuesday on Health Chat, join host Lenore Modou discussing the importance of breastfeeding. It's not only the cornerstone for a child's healthy development, but also the foundation of a country's development. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Else chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC. Right here on VOA Africa.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage. that can't be found anywhere else, right here on VOA.